at KPFT. Thank you from KPFT Houston, Radio for Peace.
FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Valensky,
Brian Levinka,
Glenn Holt,
and Jonathan Kraft.
And tonight in our second hour, we have J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage. But first, December 1st is World AIDS Day. And this year marks the 25th anniversary. The city is planning a candlelight vigil downtown at Tranquility Park. We will discuss that and other events planned for this coming Sunday. Then in News Wrap, Illinois Governor Pat Quinn has signed his state's marriage equality bill, and he did it on Abraham Lincoln's desk. In defiance of a Pentagon order requiring equal military benefits for spouses of legally married gay or lesbian National Guard members, Oklahoma Governor Mary Flynn has decided ain't nobody's spouse is getting benefits in her state. On the other hand, the Vatican has honored openly gay 16-year-old American science prodigy Jack Andreka. In the feature segments from This Way Out, several more news tidbits from around the world, including a report on the United Methodist Church Reverend Frank Schaefer, who was given a 30-day suspension for officiating at the marriage of his gay son. At 10 o'clock, it's J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage. Tonight, J.D. looks at the band Buena Vista, which was featured in the 1977 landmark film Word Is Out. J.D. has interviews with the band members and, of course, some of their music, Jack.
Well, we make this announcement. We try to remember to do it every show that if you pledge to KPFT, please fulfill it. If you haven't, you can go to kpft.org and pledge to this radio show and or this station. News this week, the mayor announced same-sex benefits to people who are legally married. This is really interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. A few years back, there was a charter amendment that passed that basically said the city could not offer same-sex benefits and unless it was superseded by state or federal. Well, because of the Supreme Court decision, the chief lawyer, legal counsel for the city, said that federal law supersedes it, so that anybody who is married, and that includes same-sex couples from another state, even though it isn't recognized in the state of Texas, would qualify for benefits like any other married couple. So, and I'm sure somebody's going to be trying to bring it to court, but we're going to see what's happening. I was hoping we'd get a non-discrimination ordinance, but we'll see when that happens. So that's really interesting news, and we'll probably do a little bit larger segment on it next week. You're listening to Queer Voices.
Walk away, that's what you do. And it looks like I'm somebody you once knew. You're caught in a corner, you know where to hide your eyes. Do you think you wanna say goodbye? Hey, always the last to say. Everything makes you feel like walking away. Come on, come on, come on, come on. Hey, always the last
like a dream, the sky is falling. Is it you who's talking? Can I take these words away? Hey.
That was Will Young singing Come On. This is Queer Voices.
This is Brian Levinka, and we have an upcoming date in the community which I think is fairly important. It's the 25th anniversary of World AIDS Day, which happens on December 1st. So I gathered a group of experts from around the community to come in and talk about the events and testing going along with World AIDS Day. So in the studio, I have John Michael Gillespie, the Senior Health Planner for the Bureau of HIV, STD, and Viral Hepatitis Prevention. That's a long title. Timmy Martinez, the Senior Director of Development at Legacy Community Health Services, and Rachel Nahan, the Manager of Community Health at Legacy Community Health Services. So welcome.
Well, thank you for having us here this evening.
Yes. Okay, so John, tell me, what is your role at the city, John Michael?
Well, I work with the HIV, STD, and Viral Hepatitis Prevention Bureau. Anything prevention in the city of Houston pretty much comes through off our bureau. We partner with several community-based organizations, including Legacy, to provide testing, linkage to care, and prevention education throughout Harris County.
And Rachel, what is your role at Legacy? What do you do?
So at Legacy, I work in the Public Health Services Department, and I oversee all of the HIV testing that we do in the community here in Montrose and the greater Harris County area.
So in general, has infection gone down with HIV over the last few years, or has it stayed about the same? Where are we seeing more infections these days?
So infection rates, we have about 50,000 new infections each year. And the number of new infections are actually highest among the young gay and bisexual men, ages 13 to 24. So we are still seeing people getting infected with HIV.
Especially the younger generation that didn't see the 80s and the 90s and all the death and destruction.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to talk about World AIDS Day itself and kind of some of the events and maybe some of the testing that we're going to do that's going along with the World AIDS Day. So there's a big candlelight vigil that's happening on World AIDS Day, December 1st, correct?
Yes, we are holding the annual candlelight observance on December 1st at 5 p.m. at Tranquility Park downtown. It's the weekend after Thanksgiving, so hopefully we'll have a large turnout.
We hope so.
Yeah.
It's a very moving, I don't want to say celebration, but memorial for people that have passed from HIV/AIDS. There's candlelights, there's speakers. I know Blake Hayes from 96.5 is going to be speaking.
And we have, Bayou City Performing Arts Center performing at the beginning of the ceremony, followed by a handful of politicians. But mostly the significance on the candle lighting and taking a step to remember the past, remember people that have passed before us. More people now are living with HIV than ever before in any period in time. The last stats I saw was 20% increase in those living with HIV in Harris County. So it's a time to reflect, remember, and then know that we have to move forward to see what we can do to stop
it. Right. It's more of a manageable disease, I would say, now, but people still die from HIV.
Right.
Would you agree?
Yes.
So it's not, you know, it's not a, you can't take a pill and, you know, guarantee that you'll live.
Well, it's kind of amazing. When I first got into working for the health department, we'd get clients that would end up at Bentov Hospital, dying because mm-hmm. they were never screened. You know, and they came in when they were extremely sick.
They had the full-blown AIDS.
Right. And it's just amazing to me that that still happens. That's why what we do with community testing, it's what Legacy does in Montrose area, is very important.
We want to catch it early and get them on medication and maximize the chance for surviving.
Right, right. Treatments, prevention.
So. Now, Timmy, you've been quiet. Tell us what Legacy's planning.
One of the things that we're going to do, and it's the first time that we'll be doing it, our Montrose location here at 1415 California, we're going to illuminate the side of the building that faces Westheimer with a series of red ribbons. And we're going to do that actually Friday, November 29th, Saturday, November 30th, and then Sunday, December 1st from 6 p.m. to 12 a.m. And the reason that we decided to do this on Friday and Saturday and not just Sunday is that we know that there's going to be a lot of traffic coming up and down Westheimer. It's a holiday weekend. It's the weekend. And we wanted to go ahead and bring awareness to the fact that it is World AIDS Day on December 1st. HIV AIDS is still with us. You know, when you make the comment that there's a lot of what I would call youngsters, people younger than me, who don't know what happened in the 80s and 90s, we want to remind people that it is still with us. So we'll also have, in addition to the ribbons, we're going to have signage illuminated that will say World AIDS Day, Always Remember. And we felt it was important that we do that because we were one of the first nonprofits and one of the first responders in Houston to actually start offering testing in the 80s and then offer treatment. So it's a part of our legacy.
Right. And I have to disclose that I'm on the board of Legacy, so I do kind of know a little bit of the history of Legacy Community Health Services. But it did start out as Montrose Clinic
right.
in the early 80s when everything was kind of hitting and there was nothing anyone could do. We're just kind of trying to triage, I think,
right.
at the time.
So the other thing that we're doing on December 1st, Legacy's Community Resource Center in Beaumont is partnering with several organizations that include the Beaumont chapter of the NAACP, the Palm Center, the Texas Black Women's Initiative, Baptist Hospitals, Southeast Texas. So we're doing an event from 11 to 5 at 2225 Calder Avenue in Beaumont. So anyone listening to us in Beaumont, either...
And we reach out there.
Yes, either through the podcast or online,
right,
or
right.
On the radio right now. Please stop by and find out about the services being offered in the Beaumont area. There'll also be testing available that day.
Now, let's talk a little bit about testing here in Houston. Is Legacy offering that? I'm looking at you, Rachel.
Yeah, Legacy offers free HIV testing. We're going to be offering it all throughout the week to commemorate World AIDS Day. But we also offer it Monday through Thursday from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. and on Fridays 11 to 4. And if you take a look at Legacy's website, you'll also see many of the places in Montrose where we do testing after hours.
Now, do they charge for this testing? Or
no, all the HIV testing is free of charge.
Just walk in and get
a test. Just walk right in and say you want to take an HIV test, and then the front desk will be sure to help you. And like I said, if you take a look at the Legacy website, we do testing after hours all throughout Montrose. So just come find one of our community health workers at one of the locations, and they'll take care of you.
And also, as part of the observance of World AIDS Day, we decided to do a week-long series of events, but we're going to be open that Saturday, December 7th,
right.
to do testing at what time?
It's going to be from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., so we'll be offering free testing at the Legacy Montrose location at 1415 California.
Now, John Michael, I'm going to get you in here. Are there things that the city is doing that we can kind of highlight?
All throughout every week, we have the three STD clinics throughout Houston. There's one north side, Sunnyside, and southwest in Sharpstown. You can look at HoustonHealth.org for locations, phone numbers. Most are first come, first serve, based on income. And then we also have the mobile unit that is usually at least once a week in the Montrose area. And it's available. The calendar's also on the website to find the different locations. It's free. And if you happen to test positive for something, you can get treatment at all locations, including the mobile unit.
So there's somebody on site if you test positive with the rapid test, and you can go to someone immediately and get some sort of advice and guidance?
Right. Well, there's a lab tech, and basically the test that's going to come back to get would be syphilis. So we treat for syphilis, and then if the HIV test does come back positive, we can go ahead and follow up with the confirmatory blood test, mm-hmm. and, you know, it's a pretty quick turnaround.
Now, we mentioned that the fastest infection is in the young gay male population. How are we trying to reach out to that population as a city and as legacy to kind of educate and kind of prevent HIV infection?
With the city, we have several task forces that there's one that focuses on gay men of all ages. And then you have the youth task force as well. Community Partners Legacies works extensively in that.
Yeah, and, you know, we do a lot of prevention and education through the Public Health Service Department. We have different programs that we offer and different community-level interventions. So really our focus is through prevention, education, and then treatment as prevention. So for the young folks who are HIV positive, making sure they get into treatment, get onto medication, and, you know, become undetectable.
Are people that are newly infected, are they surprised? Are they just shocked? Are they devastated? What are usually their reaction?
Well, it's certainly a life-changing piece of news to receive. So, you know, everyone reacts to things differently. But, you know, the most important thing is to be there and be compassionate and to be there for them, to make sure that they know they're not alone and to help them get into treatment. That's the most important part.
Now, there's some other events that are going on around the city, and I guess the best resource for these events is the Ryan White Planning Council website. That's www.rwpchouston.org, and there's a listing for World AIDS Day events for 2013. Other than the citywide observance, there's a World AIDS Day luncheon on Monday.
That Monday, and it's benefiting AIDS Foundation Houston.
Right, and the Montrose Center is having the Paper Chain of Remembrance.
Right, and then we're going to be doing a couple of other events, and people will be able to check our Facebook page for updates on what we're doing. But one of them will be a screening of How to Survive a Plague.
Let's talk about that. If you're joining us, we are talking with people about World AIDS Day, which is December 1st, Timmy Martinez, Rachel Nahan, and John Michael Gillespie with the city. And there is a screening of this. Free screening of a wonderful film, a very, very tough film to watch, I think.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
That's going to be on December 4th at our Montrose location. Check the Facebook page later for a time. It's limited seating. You know, our boardroom only holds about 48 people.
Okay, so it's a very exclusive VIP engagement.
Yes. But we hope that people will come out and see the movie. It's a pretty good – if you haven't seen it, it will move you.
And it kind of talks about what was done in the early 80s when everyone was kind of confronted with HIV and kind of how they had to change the paradigm.
Right.
Of safe sex and kind of the acceptance of safe sex,
right.
especially in the gay community.
Right. So we hope that people will come out and see it if they haven't had a chance to view it yet. And then also one of the things that we're going to be doing, a photo quilt is probably the best way to describe it.
What is the photo quilt?
Well, we had a brainstorming session and someone said, why can't we get a panel from the quilt and display it? Well, there's a process to go through and there's a way to, you know, rules to display it. So what we're going to do in our building, we will have whiteboards where mm-hmm. someone can write a message. For instance, I would probably write, "Today I'm remembering my friend Andy. Photo will be taken," and then we will start connecting the photos to create a quilt.
Oh, wow.
So a virtual photo quilt.
It's right. like a virtual.
Legacy's virtual.
Virtual quilt.
Photo quilt.
So, and it's open to anyone that wants to come by and do that.
Wow. Because the actual AIDS quilt is very hard to obtain and right. to display.
Right.
Wow, that's really cool.
So
John Michael, tell us, how did you get involved with kind of prevention? And
oh, I kind of fell into it immediately out of college. I'm from West Virginia, and started at an AIDS service organization that distributed housing funds, similar to what AFH, mm-hmm. AIDS Foundation Houston, does here. And just kind of, you know, took a year off detour through Baltimore City Public Schools and then ended up in Houston.
How did you end up in Houston?
That's a good question, because Texas was not on the
or plan. Very red state.
Yeah, well, West Virginia, too.
Yeah.
So, you know. But it's been an experience. Worked for the health department for 5 years. And, you know, we were, you know, I had the job of, you know, telling people their diagnosis and finding their partners and bringing them in to get treated. So kind of learned a lot about Houston in a little about amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so what are the challenges today facing people with HIV? Is it just getting the medication? Is it the financial? What sort of challenges would you say are there today?
Stigma. Remaining in healthcare. I think, you know, people in general are poor consumers of healthcare. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't ask the right questions, or something's bothering us, we don't bring it up. With all the side effects of HIV medications, you know, it's hard sometimes to stay on treatment. You guys have anything?
Rachel, what are some of the challenges today facing people that are...
I think some of the challenges facing people with HIV today are accessing healthcare, affording healthcare, a lot of the same things people with chronic disease find. And so finding a provider, getting an appointment, and, you know, finding knowledgeable providers and feeling like they don't have to walk around with a stigma. I think the stigma is a huge part of living with HIV today. How to, you know, talk to your partners, mm-hmm. How to even get tested or, you know, be in a relationship with HIV. So I know that on a daily basis, I work with folks who are both negative and positive, and it's a good conversation to have.
What is that? Serodiscordant?
Mm-hmm. Serodiscordant couples.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
But we do have great conversations every day, especially about something called PrEP, mm-hmm. which is...
Tell us what that is.
So PrEP is a medical protocol. It's a medication that you take, same HIV medication that folks with HIV take, but essentially creates a medical barrier preventing the virus from making copies of itself if you happen to be, are exposed to it, right? So PrEP is a fantastic breakthrough in medication. And so we have that conversation almost daily with folks. So if you haven't heard of PrEP or if you're interested in PrEP, definitely come by Legacy and come talk to us about it.
Okay. In the last few minutes, let's kind of touch on the Candlelight Vigil once again. When is it? What time does it start?
So the Candlelight Vigil is Sunday, December 1st, starting at 5 p.m. at Tranquility Park downtown Houston, across from the Hobby Center. And about an hour and a half service.
Mm-hmm. It's very in and out. Okay, and then we have testing at Legacy. Tell us about that, Rachel.
Okay, so the testing that we'll be doing here in Montrose will be at the Legacy Montrose Clinic. It's at 1415 California Street. You can come to us any day or any time, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Thursday, 11 to 4 on Fridays. December 7th, that Saturday, we'll be open 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. offering testing, and take a look at our website to see where we're testing after hours. And they'll be doing testing again in Beaumont at their open house at the Legacy Community Resource Center at 2225 Calder Avenue.
And December 1st is the 25th anniversary of World AIDS Day. We still do not have a cure. If you haven't been tested in a while, this is a great time of year to go get tested for free at Legacy or at one of the city clinics. There's support if you have any issues or you have any questions. The websites. What is the website for the city?
Yeah, the health department can be found at HoustonHealth.org.
And that gives all the information for the clinics and...
Clinics, mobile unit testing schedule, and it runs the gamut, anything from WIC to what every service we offer and how to access it.
And is there a hotline that we can give out to people?
And the HIV-STD hotline is 832-393-5010.
And what kind of information is on there?
Basic, you know, if you have a question, they can help you out. They can point you in the right direction or connect you with somebody. They know how to direct people to the closest clinic, city clinic, and if the city clinic won't work, of how to find another testing location that would work for them. And the city funds 7-8 contractors throughout the city to provide testing and counseling. And they are kind of the go-to resource.
So it's like a one-stop shop.
Yeah, if you don't want to like go online and read about it, if you want somebody to talk to, they can help you out.
Right, and then the screening is when?
It will be the evening of December 4th at our Legacy's Montrose location, 1415 California. And I'd like to add one thing while we're kind of talking about all the events going on. You know, World AIDS Day is to bring awareness and to remind people that the disease is still with us. But I also like for people to take a moment and remember those people that are on the forefront helping fight the disease.
And I think we should also remember the people that have gone.
And the people that have gone, yes. So, it's a day of reflection. And like I said, that's why when we have the building lit, it's going to say always remember. Because it's something, you know, that we can't forget.
Absolutely. Well, December 1st is World AIDS Day. Remember it in the way that you do. And wear a red ribbon. I mean, I think that would be a great thing to do. Go get tested. Find out your status. I'd like to thank everybody for coming in and talking about this topic. And this is Queer Voices.
Nowhere in the Bible does it prohibit a loving, homosexual, and committed relationship.
Unsuccessful in his attack on the NAACP, the committee shifted to homosexuals in the state's universities.
The newspaper countered their peaceful protest with employees from the Examiner dumping a bag of purple printer's ink from a third-floor window onto the crowd below.
The guys that are beating up gays in Russia are butch homosexuals who are beating up effeminate homosexuals.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. A first marriage equality vote put Scotland on the high road. God's love loses in a U.S. Methodist court and a homophobe's heart. And from a 50s purge in Florida to purple hands in San Francisco. Your stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Sarah Sweeney.
And I'm Rick Watts.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending November 23rd, 2013. In a bipartisan 98-15 vote this week, members of the Scottish Parliament advanced the Marriage and Civil Partnership Scotland Bill in what was considered to be a crucial first step toward marriage equality. Parliament's Equal Opportunities Committee will now consider amendments and then seek a final vote from MPs. If the bill passes its third reading before the full Parliament, lesbian and gay couples could begin marrying in Scotland sometime next year. An exemption in the bill assuring religious freedom would require a faith community to opt in to perform ceremonies for gay and lesbian couples. Nevertheless, both the Roman Catholic Church and Church of Scotland opposed the legislation. But a majority of Scots in the most recent polls expressed support for marriage equality. Scottish Health Secretary Alex Neil argued that the proposal doesn't redefine his marriage in any way. What it does do, he said, is extend the eligibility of marriage. Same-gender couples in England and Wales will be able to tie the knot next year. The government of the Republic of Ireland has scheduled a public referendum on marriage equality for 2015.
Illinois Governor Pat Quinn officially made his state the 16th in America to open civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples in a signing ceremony on November 19th at the Chicago campus of the University of Illinois. It was signed on the desk, brought in from Springfield, that the 16th U.S. President and Illinois native Abraham Lincoln used to write one of his inaugural addresses. The 150th anniversary of Lincoln's Gettysburg Address the following day may have been just a coincidence. Same-gender couples in Illinois will have to wait a few more months before they can get hitched, however. In order to achieve passage, its sponsors agreed to delay implementation of the measure until June 1, 2014.
The U.S. Supreme Court overturned a key provision of the Defense of Marriage Act in June that had barred federal recognition of legally married same-gender couples. The Pentagon issued a subsequent order in October that all legally married gay and lesbian enlistees in the National Guard and their spouses must be provided the same access to military benefits as their heterosexual married peers. Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon joined her peers in Texas, Mississippi, Louisiana, and Georgia, each of whom has cited their state's constitutional ban on marriage equality for refusing to allow same-gender couples to apply for military benefits at their state-run National Guard facilities. And this week, Fallon ratcheted up the defiance by announcing that Oklahoma would no longer allow married couples of any orientation to apply for spousal benefits at those facilities. Married heterosexual enlistees in the Oklahoma National Guard will now have to join their lesbian and gay counterparts by traveling to one of the state's four federally run facilities to get the full military spousal benefits they're entitled to. The National Guard is a cooperative effort between the U.S. military and individual states. 29 of them have constitutional amendments banning marriage equality, but most of those states are complying with the federal directive.
Updating a story we reported last week, four of the five women who were arrested at a restaurant in Senegal and charged with violating the West African country's laws banning same-gender sex were freed this week. The specific charge was reportedly kissing in public. But a judge decided that police had not submitted enough evidence to prove that the women had committed a crime. The fifth of the original detainees was underage at the time of her arrest and is being tried separately. It remains to be seen if her case will also be dismissed. Private consensual adult homosexual acts are punishable in Senegal by up to 5 years in prison.
Russian President Vladimir Putin condemned what he called xenophobia against people of non-traditional sexual orientation during a meeting this week with low-level politicians. But he also defended the bill he signed in June that outlaws the distribution of gay propaganda to minors. The measure virtually criminalizes any public expression of support for LGBT rights in Russia, including pride marches.
Reports of assaults against sexual minorities have skyrocketed since the passage of that bill, including kidnappings, beatings, and rapes. People have been arrested for publicly protesting the law or even for just waving rainbow flags. Shots were fired earlier this month at Moscow's best-known gay nightclub, although no one was hurt. And there were reports on November 23rd that toxic gas had been sprayed inside that same gay night spot. Several people, among about 500 patrons, sought medical attention. Two unidentified thugs wielding a baseball bat and a pneumatic gun also broke into an HIV and STD information clinic in St. Petersburg earlier this month. Two attendees there were injured. But even a bomb threat couldn't stop the opening of the sixth annual side-by-side LGBT film festival in that city on November 21st. It's scheduled to run through November 30th.
Meanwhile, one of Russia's leading websites, gay.ru, has escaped an effort to close it down. Complaints were made to the federal media regulator that the site violated Russia's no-promo-homo law. But the regulator decided that the web portal wasn't in violation because it has a prominent adult content advisory. Media organizations can be shut down and fined up to 1 million rubles for violating the law. That would be a back-breaking equivalent of $30,000 for gay.ru.
Elsewhere, Jamaica's Constitutional Court ruled unanimously this week that three national television stations can refuse to broadcast a paid public service announcement promoting greater tolerance for LGBT people. The justices found that the state-owned Public Broadcasting Corporation of Jamaica Network didn't have to air the spot because it doesn't carry any paid advertising. They found that the other stations were within their rights to refuse to broadcast the PSA because they're under no legal obligation to provide a platform through advertising for people to disseminate their views. Jamaican lawyer and LGBT rights advocate Maurice Tomlinson stars in the public service announcement and brought the lawsuit against the stations for refusing to run it. In an online statement, he said that broadcasters didn't want to air the PSA because doing so would anger the island's fundamentalist churches. Here's the audio track of the message that the powers that be don't want Jamaicans to see.
Hi, Aunt Yvonne.
Hi, Maurice. How you doing?
Still trying to get Jamaicans to respect my human rights as a gay man.
I love you as my son. I don't know why you are gay, but as a Jamaican, I respect you and I love you. And love is enough for all of us.
In more celebratory news, the late lesbian astronaut Sally Ride, the first American woman in space, and Bayard Rustin, Martin Luther King Jr.'s gay right-hand man and lead organizer of the historic 1963 March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom, were each posthumously honored by Barack Obama on November 21st with the Presidential Medal of Freedom. The nation's highest civilian commendation recognizes those who have made especially meritorious contribution to the security or national interests of the United States or world peace or cultural or other significant public or private endeavors. The world learned after Ride's death from pancreatic cancer in 2012 through the obituary she had approved that she had spent the last 27 years of her life in a loving partnership with Tam O'Shaughnessy. The pair also collaborated on Ride's many diverse projects, including a program that encourages women and girls to engage in the sciences. O'Shaughnessy accepted Ride's award on her behalf. Rustin died in 1987 from a ruptured appendix. His surviving partner, Walter Nagel, was at the White House to accept Rustin's award. The 14 other Presidential Medal of Freedom recipients included feminist icon Gloria Steinem, entertainment magnate Oprah Winfrey, and country music star Loretta Lynn.
And finally, Pope Francis has honored a young science prodigy for his work developing a cost-effective method to detect pancreatic cancer. Jack Andreka is a 16-year-old teenager from Maryland, and he's not shy about being out. He told the local TV station that, "It's really amazing to be recognized by the Vatican, especially as a gay scientist. I mean, this would be unheard of just a few years ago." Andreka's test for pancreatic cancer is significant because it's one of the deadliest forms of the disease and difficult to detect before it's spread to other organs. The science wunderkind is in talks with a couple of biotech firms to refine and market the test. "To be part of this bridge of progress is really amazing," Andreka said. "It just shows how much the world has grown to accept people that are gay and are LGBT.
That's News Wrap for the week ending November 23rd, 2013. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pride.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Sarah Sweeney.
Clergy from both sides of the coin, the wages of sin, a laying on of hands, and a Hallmark holiday greeting are all in the lineup this week, but we begin in the U.S. state of Pennsylvania. By the power not yet vested in him, either by his state or his church, Zion United Methodist Church's Reverend Frank Schaefer pronounced his gay son and his partner married. And for a wedding gift, the denomination gave the proud pastor a 30-day suspension. Unless Reverend Schaefer stops advocating for marriage equality, his credentials could be permanently revoked. He responded this way at a press conference.
"I'm grateful that I'm still Reverend Frank Schaefer, is still there. When I addressed the jury tonight, I gave them every excuse in the book to defrock me immediately, but that did not happen. Now, I'm still wondering what it means, the conditions they've set, but I told them clearly that I can no longer be a silent supporter, but that now I feel I have to be an advocate, an outspoken advocate for all lesbian, gay, transgendered, and bisexual people. We must stop harming beloved children of God in the name of Christ. That is not what Christ asked us to do. He asked us to love our neighbor. He asked us to love and care for our neighbor, and that's what I'm here to do. I am not willing to refuse ministry to anybody.
if a gay couple asked me in the next 30 days, mm-hmm. if somebody made up their mind that quickly and wanted me to do the wedding, and there's a good reason for it, if they qualify just like anybody else, yes, I would do it. Nowhere in the Bible does it prohibit a loving, homosexual, and committed relationship.
The Reverend Frank Schaefer of Lebanon, Pennsylvania, discussing the suspension of his ministerial credentials by the United Methodist Church for officiating at his gay son's wedding. The progressive Christian group Faithful America has gathered nearly 25,000 petition signatures on Schaefer's behalf, and 30 Methodist clergy committed civil disobedience by co-officiating at the marriage of a gay couple in Philadelphia. Well, I won't back down. No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of globe-trotting homophobic crusader Scott Lively, who wrote a book claiming that most Nazis were gay men, offered his perspective on what's been going on in Russia during a recent conversation with Linda Harvey on her far-right Mission America radio program.
A reality check in Russia. This idea that this is creating, this new law is going to create violence in the streets, attacks on gangs. Now, first of all, you can always punish violence no matter. So that's right. they're conflating two issues that they just like they do in this country. Go punish the violence and then deal with the sexual issue, morality issue differently. Number one, but sexual orientation, homosexuality is legal in Russia. It's not. Right. Yeah, it's not illegal.
Nobody's kicking down anybody's doors. Now, no. Russia does have nationalists, and these are, you know, what are nationalists? These are Nazis, right? This is the same as I wrote the book, The Pink Swastika, yeah. Homosexuality in the Nazi Party.
Right.
That's the same. The guys that are beating up gays in Russia, and they're really, it's not any more prevalent than it ever has been, really, and it isn't all that prevalent at all. But the ones that are doing it are butch homosexuals who are beating up effeminate homosexuals. The same thing that happened in Germany. Mm. Like, this is gay on gay crime, what it appears to be, because that's the people who are most focused on hostility toward effeminate men. Are masculine oriented homosexual men who just loathe any effeminacy, even in themselves.
Wow.
So that's what's going on there. This has nothing to do with the anti-propaganda law, which doesn't criminalize homosexuality. I just came back from Moscow, and I was there for a week. I met with the archpriest Dmitry Smirnov, who is the right hand man of the patriarch of the Russian Orthodox Church, the mm-hmm. Pope mm-hmm. of the Russian Orthodox Church, and what I was over there to do was to pitch the idea of the Russians adopting the rainbow as a Russian symbol, a Christian symbol, reclaiming the rainbow.
Oh, wow.
And to do the Russian Olympics under the banner of the rainbow that says the rainbow belongs to God.
Oh, gosh, that's great.
Because the gays have, you know, Brian Kammacher infiltrated the Gay and Lesbian Journalists Association here in Boston, and they sat in on a seminar where they were laying out their campaign to, quote unquote, rainbow bomb the Russian Olympics, by getting celebrities and Olympians to display the rainbow as a protest against the Russians. So what better way to neutralize that whole campaign than to just take back the rainbow that's not theirs in the first place?
Yeah. Oh, fabulous. Idea.
It looks like they're going to do that. The patriarch is interested in that. The archpriest, you know, Father Dmitry was very supportive of it. And frankly, I'd like to announce right here on your program, I'd like to declare and get all the pro-family organizations to come along, is to declare 2014 the year of God's rainbow.
Oh, fabulous.
And have all of us adopt it. I'm wearing a pin right now that says Reclaim the Rainbow, Ezekiel 128.
I think all
of us should just start taking the rainbow, putting it on our web pages, mm-hmm. wearing it, and just take it away from them. It doesn't belong to them.
Right. Oh, fabulous, fabulous. Neither does the word gay. How in the world did we ever get to the point where we're looking at Russia for pro-family guidance? You know?
Yes, really. It's an amazing turn of events and trading places. The United States is becoming a kind of gay Soviet Union,
mm-hmm.
and Russia is becoming a champion of the biblical worldview. Slowly, it's not entirely there,
right.
but there is a Christian revival of sorts happening in Russia at the same time as the United States is collapsing into totalitarianism
yeah.
with a heavy gay emphasis.
Yeah, and explain for the people that may not be up to speed on this about the law that was passed in Russia
yeah.
recently. Tell
yeah.
people.
Well, actually, I'm taking some credit for this because in 2006 and 2007, I did a 50-city tour of the former Soviet Union with my wife.
Wow.
And I was advocating for the very law that the Russians have just adopted, which was to basically criminalize propaganda to children, and
yeah.
Which we should do in this country as well.
Yeah, we should.
That's what I was promoting, among several things, but that was the main emphasis, to protect the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the final city of the tour was St. Petersburg. I published my letter to the Russian people in 2007, and I laid out in detail. And then St. Petersburg became the first city to adopt this anti-propaganda law citywide. Then a number of other Russian cities adopted it, and then the Russian Duma voted unanimously to adopt it nationally, and President Putin signed it. So that's on the books now, and it's being enforced.
Scott Livery is currently on trial for crimes against the humanity of Ugandan LGBT people. Activist groups there say he demonized them in several junkets to the East African country and pushed for passage of the so-called Kill the Gays Bill. That infamous measure is still pending in Parliament and punishes certain homosexual acts with execution. And for the record, contrary to one of Lively's claims, four other Russian regions passed no-promo-homo laws before St. Petersburg enacted its version last year. The well-respected Southern Poverty Law Center has labeled Linda Harvey and her Mission America an anti-gay hate group.
Hi, I'm Rick Watts, and as one of the newscasters for This Way Out's News Wrap, my voice may be familiar to you. But what you may not know is that there are a great many reasons I strongly support the important work that This Way Out does, and the important resource that it provides around the world. And only with your help, too, does this good work continue. Please log on to www.thiswayout.org.
Purple reigns in San Francisco after This Way Out queer life and literature commentator Janet Mason looks at a fictional account of the very real intersection of civil rights and LGBT rights in U.S. history.
My thinking about the connections between civil rights and LGBT rights was further deepened when I read the recently published novel The Sin Warriors by Julian E. Farris, Leith Press, 2012. The novel is based on the actual events in 1956 in the state of Florida when, as the author writes in the afterword, the Florida Legislative Investigation Committee, chaired by Senator Charlie Johns, was formed to investigate the NAACP as a communist front following the United States Supreme Court ruling overturning segregation in public schools. Unsuccessful in its attack on the NAACP, the committee shifted to homosexuals in the state's universities. In 1956, in the state of Florida, homosexuality was a criminal offense. The result is that many gay men who were targeted were fired, fled on their own, or quietly disappeared through suicide. 300 gay professors and students vanished. The investigation targeted teachers, students, and gay individuals in all state agencies. The Sin Warriors is a work of fiction inspired by this historical event. Farris presents us with fully three-dimensional characters who come to play major roles in this case.